Better than this, I don't know what I'm doing. I can't do this shit. Better than this? God, it's me and Dudes. You're on the Draft Dudes podcast, presented by Locked On. It's Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs from the Draft Network. We are your hosts here on this Tuesday takes edition of the show. Kyle, are we getting close to like takes on takes?
We're in the 60s, the high 60s, I believe.
That's a long time.
Can I ask you a question,
sure,
though? It almost, I don't want to assume. Just sounded like you almost forgot what your name was there on the intro. What's up with that?
You know, I didn't think you were going to notice that. But, you know, it's one of those deals where my mind was a little distracted while I was doing the intro, kind of just sorting some tabs on my computer, you know, as we were doing the podcast.
Oh, yeah, I know that. I know that feeling.
Yeah, so I just kind of coasted through it and had to have some moments of remembrance, if you will.
Very good.
You ever see Ben Solak's computer? You ever seen this guy? When he's
what gonna... a shit show this wow. is.
Between Trevor's typing and Ben's, you know, I mean, minimum 25 tabs open at a time.
I was going to say, he's probably, on average, has 50 browser tabs open.
It's remarkable. I don't know how
these
guys operate.
You and I are Mac Hive, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you know if you click and hold the green button on your browser?
Yeah.
You can auto split screen your screen and have two browsers up at the same time.
No, I didn't. Every single day, multiple times, because I close all my browsers every time I step around away from the computer, I minimize them and kind of set them up at the sizes that I want. And that
you just try this? You just tried it, I see?
Wow. Yep. Thank you.
So now imagine, I believe you have two monitors, correct?
Of course. How else do you work?
You can have at least four browsers up simultaneously,
yeah,
and not have to like click and drag and resize them, and to hell with that.
This is
the way to go.
How do you get out of it though? Let me ask you that.
You click the green button again.
Oh, okay.
And it will diminish that one.
Yeah.
And then it should swipe over to full screen for the other one, right?
Yeah, that's amazing. I did my first scouting report today, Kyle. For the
congratulations. Yeah. Who was it? I'm guessing either Marcus Bailey or Dylan Moses.
Keep going.
Really?
We literally talked about it earlier. Come on now.
Today?
Yes. Literally within the last 3 hours on the phone, we talked about this player. Come on, man.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm having a brain fart.
Big time. This is worse than me forgetting my name. Bryce Hall.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're like, I mean, guys that are injured, there's no more film to watch.
True. Yeah.
Did his write up today.
I've just been in denial that Bryce Hall's done for the year.
Well, it's true. And look, I mean, there's a chance he could be ready for testing. You know,
could be.
Yeah. It's not the end of the world type thing. Whatever you think Bryce Hall is, that's shouldn't change based on this injury. It's unfortunate, but, you know, he's not dead. Yeah. For lack of better words.
And there were a lot of questions when he got hurt. That's like, well, what is this relative to like what happened with Sidney Jones? And very different mm-hmm. type of injury. And you don't want to assume what the recovery window looks like, but we've seen some pretty gnarly ankle dislocations.
Yeah.
That guys like play later in the same year with. Like Ronald Darby came back after like 8 weeks and it looked like his foot was going to fall off. So like, depending on what the ligament issue or ligament damage looks like there, that may or may not be more of a long-term thing. They really haven't established that, but don't panic on Bryce. Like Joe, as you said, you know, if you liked him, this is not the kind of situation like a Sidney Jones where it takes a while to get the explosiveness back.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be that type of injury.
Gruesome injury, but
yes.
I mean, this dude's practicing in May for sure with rookie camp. I mean, it's that simple. He should be. All right, takes on takes, Kyle. You ready? Would you like to have the first one or not?
Yes, I would like to have the first one.
Okay, good, because you're a big fan of who have they played. So, the impressive performance from the Pats defense this season can only be taken with a grain of salt because they haven't played anybody good yet.
Well, you can only play the teams that are put on your schedule. Joe Marino likes to say that. And I think I saw the Patriots point differential this season through what? They're 7-0 now, right? is greater than the point differential of all the other teams in the AFC combined. So I don't care who you played. If you're outpacing the entire conference with your point differential, I think that's impressive.
Oh, it's impressive, but come on. Like, I don't know. It's the NFL. It's not like you're scheduling softies in from the FCS. You know what I mean? Like, it's the
right league. You're not playing like Northwestern State University.
Yeah, dude. Like, I don't know. I'm always, I mean, we're seven games into this thing and they're mowing them down.
Mowing them down.
So, except for the Bills, only a one score game, might remind everyone.
All right, you done?
No, I just want to move on.
We can move on.
Yeah.
Vontel, who holds the claim for the most disappointing this season between the Falcons and the Chargers?
I like this one. To me, it's the Chargers. No. To me, it's the Falcons. It's the Falcons is the team that's more disappointing. The Chargers, like, we sort of started to feel that this wasn't going to work out before the season when Derwin James and Russell Okung, you know, before you could even start the season, were in jeopardy in terms of when they're going to play the season and the Melvin Gordon situation. And, you know, the Falcons were a team that, yeah, I mean, they had some issues with those young offensive linemen, Caleb McGarry. He winds up playing week one. I mean, that team is one that doesn't have the excuse level, I think, that the Chargers do. And I mean, the Falcons are nowhere near as banged up as the Chargers. They're still pretty banged up, but I think that the Falcons are definitely a team this year that, I mean, we're not talking about blowing up the Chargers coaching staff after this year, are we? We are definitely, I mean, based on takes every week, everyone wants Dan Quinn gone. So I think it's
Falcons. Yeah, and he needs to be gone. So I agree with you. It's a good take.
Glazers Out says, with Evan Engram having drop problems and not being the best blocker, the Giants should trade him if they have a good offer. Hashtag looking at you, Pats.
No, absolutely not. Tight ends, let's be honest. First round tight ends in the NFL this day and age aren't drafted to block. I don't care that Evan Engram can't block. The drops the last couple of weeks have been frustrating, but he is catching the ball.
Three, Kyle. Is three drops and 52 targets this year? Yeah, three.
I think I saw two drops last week that were both egregious. No business dropping them, but it is what it is. And didn't the Giants play in the rain?
So yes, he had two of his three drops were last week. He had one in week two against the Bills. He has 3 and 52 catchable targets this year, 34 receptions.
And he was playing without gloves because of the rain this past weekend, I think. So no, I'm assuming this tweet came in after the game.
Yeah, it's one of the more recent ones. Yeah.
So I wouldn't let recency bias here kind of ruin Evan Engram as a talent. And as far as not being the best blocker, the Giants should not be asking him to block at all, Right. Period. They should not. And if they are going to do so, then they should trade him because they don't deserve him. Bryce Olson turned in by Jason Willis. Garoppolo is a bottom of the league quarterback, just on a team with a great defense and run game for what it's worth.
Ooh, baiting us into saying bad things about the 49ers, huh? No, I don't think he's a bottom of the league quarterback. I think it's a fair question to have about the 49ers and that Jimmy G hasn't had to be the reason why they're winning football games, and he's been pretty average. But, I mean, you're coming out pretty bold here and saying that he's a bottom of the league quarterback. I mean, bottom of the league quarterbacks are very different than what we're seeing from Jimmy G. So I'll say
bottom of the league quarterback or bottom of the league starting quarterback.
He says bottom of the league quarterback, but even if it is starting quarterback.
All right. So Jimmy G is a top blank 20. Starter in the NFL.
Top 20, top 25.
So that's a bottom of the league.
Bottom of the league. I think even third, the bottom third would be 24 to 32. I think he's closer to 20.
You just said 20 to 25, which could put him in.
Come on, Kyle. We're splitting hairs on that one spot. If I say 20 to 25, it's probably closer to 20, but not necessarily above 20.
Okay, so he's a bottom 10 quarterback in the NFL.
He's a middling starting quarterback. He's not a bottom of the league. Bottom of the league.
Just give me the soundbite I want and we can move on.
No, you're not getting it. I'm not. I'm not, because you've paid for the sins, our 49ers sins, harder than me. And I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to get me lumped in, and I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. See, it's funny how that works. I'm always seem to be the one that pays for our sins on the podcast.
Well, that was my mistake. I should not have lumped myself in with some of your takes over the summer.
Likewise. See, you're trying to tell me the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to be any good.
You're trying to tell me the Cleveland Browns are going to be good.
Browns at least have a chance.
Yeah, 2-4. Baker Mayfield, most interceptions per game of any of the 2018 class. So, all right, let's move on. We already did that one. Ty Smith, here we go. He wants the dunk. I like this. Ty Smith said this on May 13th, and he quote tweeted it and said he nailed it. The 49ers had the best backfield and defensive line in the NFL.
I think they have the defensive line in the NFL who's playing the best right now.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're the most established, or if you gave me the starting four versus some of the other ones in the NFL that have maybe been doing a little bit longer, there I might lean towards other teams, but with a larger sample size, I think it would be fair to say the 49ers could very easily have the best defensive line in the NFL.
Like if you were going to take, you could say you can have any four in the NFL that currently exists on a roster, you'd take 49ers, right?
Right now, yeah. Best backfield. I think they have the deepest backfield.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on how you want to define best. I would take an elite talent over having three guys that are very good at outside zone concepts. But for what they're asked to do, they've got three guys that can do it at a very high level. So it's good. Take from David Bullen. With Joe Burrow playing so well, do you think he could be another Mitch Trubisky who gets drafted high off of one good season, but will then struggle against pro defenses?
I think the parallel of him having one good season does play into the Mitch Trubisky thing, although Joe Burrow at least had 2 years of experience starting, whereas Mitch didn't even have that. Or I think I have more confidence in Burrow than I do Mitch, and I liked Mitch coming out. What's really different about what those guys do in college is, you know, Mitch comes from a very elementary, basic offense at North Carolina under what was that coach's name? I've already forgot his name. Whoever that coach was. Larry Fedora. Larry Fedora. Very elementary offense with no pro concepts, where this new passing game that Joe Brady has installed in LSU is all about sight adjustments and reading the defense and running routes based on concepts as opposed to just running routes. So it puts a lot on the football intelligence of not only the receivers for LSU, but also for Joe Burrow to be able to read that. And he's reading it really well. I mean, he's completing a high percentage of his passes and completion percentage.
He's at almost like 80%.
Yeah, which is an indicator of understanding of pre-snap reads, why you're going and why you're making certain throws. I mean, it's an indicator of football intelligence. To me, I think Burrow is definitely, and I know it's easy to say right now with the information we have on Mitch and what we don't know about Joe Burrow, but I think there's reasons to believe based on what I just said that Burrow won't be a guy that immediately struggles to the caliber Trubisky does against pro defenses. Next one here comes from Trevor Joseph. Add the Chicago Bears to the accretion of teams who will be in the 2020 quarterback mix so that Matt Nagy can personally handpick a young signal caller capable of running not just his offense, but an offense in general. Hashtag takes on takes. Hashtag true vocabulary for Joe.
All right. So what does accretion mean?
I don't know, but I'm guessing the mix, the pool, the
that would be my inventory assumption. Well, I'm not gonna lie, I didn't pre-look this one up. So
Let me tell you what it means. It means the process of growth or increase, typically the gradual accumulation of additional layers or matter. Good usage of the word, Trevor.
I don't know if the Bears actually will, but the Bears absolutely should, because Trubisky looks awful. This isn't just getting stagnant with Mitch. This is straight regression with him. And we've seen a lot of quarterbacks come into the NFL and then there's some sustained play and then they flatten out and then everybody gets the book on them and they can't overcome it and they actually regress. And that's what we're in danger of beginning to see here with Trubisky in year three. And Joe, you said you were a fan of Trubisky. I was a huge fan of Trubisky's potential prior to the 2017 NFL draft. I had him QB2 behind Deshaun Watson, one spot ahead of Patrick Mahomes. So there's going to be some egg on face here, but small sample size, that's kind of the risk that you run. And as Trubisky has kind of accumulated the reps required to take the next step, it's become pretty apparent that there's just some a lack of intrinsic feel, I think, is the best way to put it. Just not a natural feel for playing the quarterback position. And I think Chicago would be very wise to assess this class when you consider the depth of this class. But I don't think they'll actually do that. I doubt they would do so 2 years after drafting or 3 years after drafting Trubisky.
Well, they don't have a first-round pick either.
Right. And they're kind of on pace. They'll probably finish around 50.
Yeah, so what – I mean, the thing is, though, really, like in the 50 range, there could be somebody interesting, Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
There could be an Eason. There could be a Love. There could be a Jake.
I doubt Love's there.
I'm just throwing Love's names too, out there.
I know, but I think Love's too toolsy, and that's the kind of quarterback that I would, if I was Chicago, look at.
Right, so don't you think – I think that might play into it. It's like, all right, who are we talking about? Who's available in that range? Who do the quarterback needy teams pass on, you know, just based on other needs or, you know, not being completely sold on? That's going to dictate the discussion to me. Or what about this conversation of an Andy Dalton-type player to come in? You think Andy Dalton can't come in there and you know, unite with Matt Nagy and be at least 2018 Mitch?
Yeah, no question.
So
I think he could. Yeah, I think Chicago's going to have options, and I think it'll be interesting to see what they do, because good teams are the ones that don't marry themselves to mistakes for longer than they should, right? And it's very easy Trubisky does not turn this around this year, it'd be real easy for Chicago to say, well, you know, he was our guy and we picked him, so we're going to stay committed to him. Well, no, don't do that. If he's this bad, you got to bring somebody else in and you got to push him. And he'll either rise to the occasion or he'll fall off. Take from Dion, speaking of draft quarterbacks in 2020. With Jake Fromm's draft stock going down, he will end up in the best situation by being drafted by the Patriots at the end of round one. He gets to learn under Brady for a year. Brady retires and the Patriots dynasty continues.
Wow, there's a lot of layers to that. I don't think Jake Fromm seamlessly replaces Tom Brady and the dynasty continues at the level we know it. But I'll say this. I think the NFL is going to like Fromm more than maybe some of the draft media is going to. I do recognize some of his limitations in terms of arm talent, and obviously he has been disappointing at times this year, but I think he's got the type of makeup that the NFL is looking for, and I've said this several times now, I'm not totally convinced he's in this crop of quarterbacks for 2020. I mean, obviously he's eligible, but he's absolutely the type of guy that I can see coming back to Georgia and not being part of what, you know, is a pretty deep pool of quarterbacks, and I don't think he's in the top tier of them. And so, you know, I think that plays into it a little bit, but I think that, yes, I think Jake Fromm could definitely be in play for a team like the Patriots or the Saints or something like that. But, you know, I don't know that he's going to make anyone forget about Breeze and Brady, I'll tell you that. Next one here comes from Graham Small, who says, hitting the panic button on the Philadelphia defense. Scheme is neither dynamic nor adaptive. Personnel is not NFL caliber. Pass catchers on offense are horrific, crippling an offense in a passing league. Shows why draft success is critical to Super Bowl window.
Oh, weird. Somebody just wrote about that at the Draft Network today, didn't they?
If I recall correctly.
He's actually saying, you said he was hitting the panic button on the Philadelphia defense. He's saying he's hitting the panic button on the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah. team that you and I were both extremely high on coming into the
year. Well, listen, Jim Schwartz is being real stubborn with this defense, guys. He knows what he thinks it's supposed to look like, and he's banking on his front seven to get home. And to be quite frank, the Eagles' pass rush really is not where it needs to be right now for Schwartz to play the kind of style of defense that he's trying to play. As far as the offense, pass catchers are horrific. They got terrific tight ends. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going on with Nelson Agholor. Dead man walking this year.
Don't want to catch the ball.
Nope. Deshaun Jackson's hurt. Alshon Jeffrey looks exceptionally lethargic this year, to put it nicely. I think there are some significant flaws with the Philadelphia Eagles roster that I don't necessarily think that they've mortgaged themselves from a draft perspective to be problematic. I just think they've kind of went back to the veteran well a few too many times to try and cover up holes on the roster, right? Because they drafted a really good player this year in Andre Dillard. But the problem is they didn't quote unquote need Andre Dillard in a contract or in a win now mode when you could have used that first round pick for somebody who would have had a bigger impact on your roster now. So it's a really delicate balance. But for the Philadelphia Eagles in 2019, they're not playing good football, and they are very – I don't see an easy fix for them, Joe.
I think they've got to change their philosophy on defense. I'm not as concerned with this offense. The defense under Jim Schwartz and just playing continual cover zero, cover one, leaving bad corners out to dry, focus so much on being plus one in the box that – Jim Schwartz is just too married to what he wants to do and not adapting to his personnel. And he doesn't have the personnel to run a press heavy man coverage scheme. And he's getting torched vertically, blunders everywhere in the secondary. And congratulations, you're a top 10 run defense, but it doesn't matter. It's a Jim Schwartz problem. And that pains me because, you know, I've talked glowingly about Schwartz in the past, but he's not adapting to his personnel this year.
Give me that play action stat you gave me earlier today.
Oh God, this is crazy. So here it is. You pull it up. The Eagles defense against play action passes this year. They're 47 of 67, a 70% completion percentage for 639 yards. That's 9.5 yards per attempt, 8 touchdowns, 12% touchdown percentage, 2 interceptions, a passer rating against their defense of 127.4, which is 12 points higher than the number one play-action quarterback in the NFL, whose name is Patrick Mahomes, at 115.8. So every quarterback that's faced the Eagles' defense this year is better than Patrick Mahomes at play-action
against when they're playing the Eagles.
It's unbelievable.
That's amazing.
Well, I mean, how many times are you going to continue to leave, you know, Rasul Douglas and Avante Maddox and Orlando Scandrick 1v1 against guys that can't run.
They're not going to leave Scandrick alone anymore because cut his ass.
Right, but that's what they've been doing, and they're not adjusting. And I remember last year the reports about Malcolm Jenkins kind of having to go back and say, yo, dude, like, we can't do this. I don't know,
and they
made
it simple, and that's when they turned the corner. But it was around this time last year when they kind of had a player intervention that was like,
yeah,
Jim, cut it down, man. Like, let's simplify this.
Well, and hopefully they make those adjustments after the bye week for my purposes. Okay, what's up next here?
All right, so this is for you.
Yeah, this one's for me.
So Tyrion, good name.
Yeah.
Tyrion, yeah. Turned in Neil Driscoll, Dolphins guy. And I'm presuming that this take that was turned in by Tyrion is in regards to the Miami Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
Neil says, my expectations are that Tua is one of the 5 best quarterback prospects ever. That will change a lot, presumably talking about the forecast of things for the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, and I'm certainly focusing on the point here that he makes about Tua being one of the best five quarterbacks ever. And I love Tua, right? He's my QB1. He's been my number one prospect in this draft. I think what even makes it challenging for me to put him in that spot is that he doesn't have great size, he doesn't have great athleticism, and he doesn't have a great arm. And so that doesn't make you one of the five best quarterback prospects ever. I love him. I love so many things about him. I think he's going to be a great quarterback in the NFL. I love his ceiling. There's so many things I love about Tua, but you can't not check those boxes and be a top five quarterback prospect ever. Fair?
Well, who are some of the names? We got Luck, Elway, are the two that stand out big time. Manning.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Now, who's next in line? You know, that's the hard thing for me. I would say Tua is one of the five best quarterbacks of my career, comfortably.
What is that date range? 16, 15? 14?
No, I started 13 was the first year I did any draft stuff, but it wasn't in public space. So 2014 draft was my first year of doing like actual reports and publishing and writing and so on and so forth.
That's interesting. That'll be some stuff we write about here in the next 6 months.
Yeah, let's not ruin the content for the website.
Yeah. Smart. The folks at Roman, a men's health company, are changing the game with Roman Swipes, the secret to longer lasting sex. Get $10 off your first order of swipes and free 2-day shipping at GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. Next one's for you here, right? From Christian Conway. Here you go. Let's see what you think about this. This lines up nicely with the last Tua take. Jalen Hurts will go first overall in the draft.
No. Take the field, always.
Especially here.
End of conversation.
But it's fun that people have been saying that. Remember over the summer, the takes were, you think Jalen Hurts gets drafted? Could he be a day two guy? And now it's like, can he go number one? It's great.
Well, you know, he's coming in and he's balling out exactly the same way Kyler did. And, and the perception, we've had a quarterback perceived at the very best as a day three guy in two consecutive drafts come out, ball his ass off, and then get drafted first overall.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
Trubisky came out of nowhere the year before that to get drafted second overall.
Yep.
2016 was Wentz and Goff. So we've really had three consecutive years now where a guy has come out of nowhere, come out of left field, and jumped up. I think that guy's Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow's just playing phenomenal football, as we've talked about a little bit. I think Hurts has a realistic opportunity to go in the first round, especially with how much more receptive the NFL seems to be versus even just a few years ago for college concepts. Mm-hmm. And Lincoln Riley is continuing to kind of change the game, and you're going to see a bunch of guys trying to steal a bunch of his concepts and bring it to the NFL, and Lincoln might come himself. So I think Hurts has a realistic chance to go in the first round.
You had him mocked first round, right, on your Monday mock?
Yeah, I sent him to Tampa Bay.
Well, tell me about that.
As far as what?
What?
Why I gave him to Tampa Bay?
Yeah.
So thinking about the kind and style of defense or of offense that Arians wants to play, right? He wants to push the ball down the field. He wants to run a lot of deep passing concepts. And I kind of looked at Jameis Winston's numbers, Joe, and he's throwing interceptions at a higher rate than any year in his career thus far.
No risk it, no biscuit.
And he's getting sacked on 10% of his dropbacks this year. So you've got a guy who isn't making good decisions with the ball and is getting sacked a ton. And I asked myself, okay, of the available quarterback prospects, who has kind of that, again, it's intrinsic feel for the position as far as avoiding the rush and extending plays. I think that's such a big part of successful quarterback play these days. You see Patrick Mahomes does it. Deshaun Watson does it. Russell Wilson does it. Baker Mayfield last year did it. Kyler Murray used that to get drafted first overall this year. The escapability. Aaron Rodgers is very good maneuvering within the pocket and then getting outside the pocket. You know what I mean? The more I do this, the more that is a trait for me that I think is a top shelf quality that you have to have. And I look at guys like Justin Herbert, who kind of get a case of the Sam Darnolds and see ghosts in the pocket. Oh. What are you doing, man, by the way? Did you hear what Kyle Van Noy had to say about it?
I didn't. I saw Adam Gase wasn't happy, but.
My God, dude. I'll finish that thought on Hurts in a second, but Kyle Van Noy, literally, they asked him after the game, they said, what's your reaction to like Sam Darnold was mic'd up for the game today and said he was seeing ghosts on the sideline, and Kyle Van Noy goes, wait, he actually said that? And everybody kind of laughed, and like he kind of laughed and started to answer the question. He looked back to the guy and he goes, but no, seriously, he actually said that? He could not believe that Darnold actually came out and openly said that. And dude, that's a rough one. I didn't see what Gase had to say about it, so I'll look.
He was very upset about it. He said, "I'm really disappointed that ESPN would broadcast that, and we'll think very hard about allowing our guys to be mic'd up in the future."
Oh,
yeah.
Just like Adam, it's always everybody else's fault.
Maybe the real problem is that your quarterback's seeing ghost, Adam.
Build in some hots. So Jalen Hurts, for me, was the guy that was available with Burrow and Tua off the board, who I felt had the arm talent to execute a lot of what Arians wants to do, but gives them a little bit of that extended play ability that for as good and as athletic as Justin Herbert is, that's not a natural strength of his. Jacob Eason, another big-armed kid who I really like, not a natural strength to extend plays and really thrive in those kinds of conditions. So that's why I put Hurts to Tampa Bay.
Touche.
Dub G, looking, is this all one take here?
No, that's his Twitter name. Dub G, looking for stick'em for Daniel Jones' hands. That's what his Twitter name is.
That's his name?
Yeah.
Gettleman is the reason why Panthers are still competitive without Cam Newton. His drafts before being fired left impact players that, when healthy, put out solid productions. Kawan Short, Trey Turner, Shaq Thompson, and Darrell Williams. Vernon Butler, James Bradbury, Christian McCaffrey, Curtis Samuel, Taylor Moton. Those were the examples that he gave with the hashtag hot take, hashtag WG's random thought take.
That's interesting. I think
some of these players are bad players, by the way.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's that. And I think that he's added reasonable players to the mix for sure, right? Like, those are helpful players. I don't sit here and give Dave Gettleman a lot of credit as the reason why the Panthers are successful without Cam Newton. I think Marty Herney's done a really good job with this draft class and this offseason. I mean, in this offseason, he was able to add to the mix Brian Burns, Matt Paradis, Bruce Irvin, Trey Boston. I'd argue that that's probably just as meaningful as anything I just said there, combined with last year's draft class that brought DJ Moore to the mix, Dante Jackson. I mean, I'm just spitballing here off the top of my head. I don't know that Dave Gettleman deserves really that much credit. I think he picked some reasonable players. You didn't. I don't see Kelvin Benjamin and Star Latulele on the list, other first round picks that he had, you know. So, I mean, he gets credit for drafting those players, I guess, but I don't know that that's the reason why. I don't. I think Ron Rivera's a good football coach. And
you don't want to know why the Panthers are good without Cam Newton?
I'm anxious to
because
hear
it. I believe I saw they are second in the NFL in total pressures through this point in the season with 50. Which is one behind the New England Patriots.
I think they lead the league in sacks too.
That's why they're successful without Cam Newton. They got a dynamic, diverse group of receivers between Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore, Jarius Wright's their three, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a nice complimentary guy, but Samuel and Moore, they had a vision with what they want their skill players to look like at the wide receiver position, and they gave themselves that flexibility.
Yeah. It's not a Dave Gettleman gets credit, in my opinion, here. All right, Kyle, last one here. Seth Steer says, if Joe Brady stays at LSU, they will continue to be a powerhouse and find themselves in the college football playoffs at least two times in the next 5 years, including this year.
All right. So I'm going to operate on the assumption right now. This is kind of fun. Does LSU need to win the Bama game to get in the college football playoff?
You know, it's so interesting, Kyle, because if that's their only loss and then they avoid having to play in the SEC right. championship, it might be the right. best thing for them.
Right.
Just don't get killed.
If they lose by 7 points in Tuscaloosa, do they need to win the SEC championship to get in the playoff?
Probably not. I think
because you're going to have presumably the winner of LSU Alabama. Mm-hmm. Let's operate in the assumption that Alabama wins at home mm-hmm. for this hypothetical. Mm-hmm. Clemson's probably going to go undefeated. Mm-hmm. Ohio State.
They're going to have to beat Wisconsin twice.
Or Minnesota.
Oh yeah, that's true. Okay, Minnesota's I'm good.
On a hot one here.
Yeah.
The other hurdle is Oklahoma.
Right. Who are they going to lose to?
Maybe Texas in the championship game. Maybe Texas.
Yeah, maybe. What about Baylor? They got to play Baylor too.
No. Oh, okay.
Well, you just Minnesota, Wisconsin to me. I mean, come on now. Baylor.
But here, like, can you put LSU over an undefeated conference champion in the playoff?
I think right now, for the sake of this conversation, we have to operate under the circumstances that Oklahoma, Ohio State, and Clemson are in.
So then LSU has to win the championship game. Or it has to win. Yeah, they're going to have to win the SEC championship to get.
Well, what happens if Alabama goes to the SEC championship game and loses to Georgia or Florida?
Then Alabama will still have the head-to-head win over LSU.
What about one-loss Oregon, who lost to Auburn?
No way. Pound sand, Oregon.
Yeah, what about Notre Dame, who has one loss to Georgia in Athens?
I think LSU has to win the Alabama game to get in the college football playoff this year.
All right.
Once we finish this year, for the sake of Seth's take, he says 2 times in the next 5 years, whether that happens this year or not, Joe Burrow leaves. Does LSU become the new Oklahoma where the offense is just turnkey? Because if the answer is yes, then yes, they will be in the college football playoff twice in the next 5 years.
You think Joe Brady's going to stay? I mean, Joe Brady's on the great trajectory. He played and coached at.
That's not what was asked.
Yes, it is. If Joe Brady stays at LSU.
If Joe Brady stays. So if assuming he stays for 5 years, will they? Yeah. Will LSU's offense become turnkey, and will they make the playoffs twice in the next 5 years?
You got a tough course in the SEC.
I think if he stays, yes. Much tougher than Oklahoma. I could buy this take, though. LSU consistently recruits well.
They do.
Joe, I think that's going to do it for us here today on the show.
Joe Brady's going to be
a lot of good takes
in the next 2 years.
Okay. I'm glad you got that out.
Thanks.
Just like you got that Cleveland Brown shade all out at the beginning of the show.
Got the Steelers shade on me. At least my quarterback got hurt.
I don't care. Really don't care.
Go Niners.
Yeah, let's see if I can doctor up the audio here and get a Joe saying Jimmy Garoppolo is a bottom-tier quarterback. That's the goal. We'll see. Thanks for listening, guys. Come back and talk with us again tomorrow at the Joe Marino at Grinding the Tape with your hot takes. Wait, Joe.
Okay.
Free Money Thursdays. I owe somebody money.
Did you get it wrong? Oh, Boise State. I told you to.
Yeah, Boise State screwed me. Why don't you do Free Money Thursday then?
You came up with this on a whim during the show.
Yeah, it's true.
It's cost you $60 now.
It's true. I got 2 bet slips, but only one was from mybookie.ag.
Oh, yeah.
So Patrick Brown.
Again.
2-time winner. Yep, he's just cashing him in. Listens to the show, collects 20 bucks every week. It must be terrific. Congrats. I'll Venmo you. Thanks for listening to Draft Dudes, guys. Come back, see you again tomorrow.